Welcome to A Senior Moment, the show for and about seniors. I'm Joanne Rideout. I'm here in the studio with Michelle Lewis from Northwest Senior and Disability Services and Doug Schaefer from the Olympic Area Agency on Aging. We come to you every month to talk about senior issues, and today we're going to be talking about different communication skills with older adults and between family members. And communication is a really important topic anyway. We're going to be talking about that in the realm of senior issues. So why don't we just talk a little bit about basic communication skills. Michelle, how about you? What kind of things are we talking about here?
Well, oftentimes when you're visiting with an elder, you need to consider what kind of maybe disabling condition they have or conditions that they're challenges that they may have, such as hearing or vision, where they have a little bit of dementia, and then focus your conversation in a way that will accommodate that. So for instance, if they have hearing issues, then you want to make sure that they have their hearing aids in and that they're working properly for them. And if they're not, maybe you need to help them assist with that. You want to speak in lower tones, not the high volume pitches. And you want to make sure that you're facing them. You're not talking even behind them. So those kind of things that you want to consider, and each situation can be a little bit different, but you want to give some thought before you go in and just start jabbering. You know, and establish a rapport with the person so that you can have a conversation. And, you know, some of our skills as communicators actually have changed over the years, and so it's a little different generation.
Mm-hmm. Well, what are you seeing, Doug, in this whole realm? What's important?
Well, I think one of the most important things is to be aware that you're going to have to be patient. It's a little different than when you're walking down the street talking to a friend or something like that. Like Michelle was saying, a lot of times if there's a hearing loss, people will compensate. They'll be able to kind of from your facial expression and maybe even do some lip reading to some degree. So you want to make sure that you're really facing them and really participating in the conversation. And no one likes to be interrogated, so when you go in, it's always good to sit down, whether you're a family member or not, sit down, and if there's some issues you want to talk about other stuff first, you know, the weather, the family, whatever, and sort of build to that instead of going in and doing this inquisition about, okay, what's this going on, and you need to do this and this and this, and just that whole sort of what a lot of people think of as an old-fashioned idea of being polite. We were talking before the show about how frequently you can see a younger person talking to another person and they're texting at the same time to someone else or tweeting to someone else or is that it? Tweet? I don't know.
Yeah, tweeting.
I don't tweet unless I'm, you know, in a cage singing or something, but I don't. They're not purposely being impolite. It's just part of what their culture is. And they're not used to sitting down and letting someone sort of meander their way until they get to the place where some things that need to be discussed are being discussed. So patience is really big, and being polite and really listening, not just sort of waiting for your turn to talk, but really listening and hearing what people are saying and just showing them respect.
So it sounds like there's a couple of things going on here. There's sort of the generational difference in how people tend to communicate, and then there's also the health issue related communication issues. So what are, Michelle, what are some other health conditions or conditions of aging that could affect how a person communicates?
Well, they can be, vision can be a problem. Can they see you when you're talking? Do they know who you are when you come in the room? Maybe their vision is low. And so you may have to introduce yourself, you know, just casually, you know, hey, mom, it's me. Or, you know, this is Annie, and maybe you know that person a long time, but you just casually bring your name into the conversation so you know they know who you are. That's the case with dementia, too. A casual introduction is a good thing as you're walking into a room. You always need to address elders as adults and not really talk down to them as children or talk around them like they're not there. I think sometimes, especially in a family situation or when you're in a group situation, that happens real easily where the elder is off in the corner kind of soaking in what they can, and the conversation's about them, but nobody's really directing the conversation to them and giving them the dignity of interacting with that. sometimes there's emotional things going on too. Elders quite often have lost a lot of folks in their life. They've lost their husbands, their children, their friends. And so you may see some grief or anxiety in the conversation, and you need to be attentive to that, not just ignore it and move on quickly, but understand that they may still have some of those things going on, and they're hurting from past losses.
So how do you address that? I mean, what do you say?
Talk about it, you know? So, yeah, Dad died 10 years ago, and, you know, I think I've dealt with it, but, you know, Mom may still have some feelings about it. She was with him 50 years, you know? So talk about it. Talk about what Dad did and how she feels about it, and give her that respect of having to grieve for a very long time, perhaps, or just acknowledging that that was part of their life. It's not even maybe grief, but acknowledging that person was there in their life. And it's a good place to gather good family history and knowledge that you may miss otherwise.
Well, it seems like there's a lot of you know, we talk about cultural differences. There's sort of age-related cultural differences where I know my mom passed away in, 1990, and my dad would never have even thought of going out with anyone else. Because I know years after my mom died, we had that conversation where, you know, if you want to see somebody else, and he was still has his wedding ring on from all those years ago, you know, and for him it was just like, no way, she was the one, mm-hmm. you know. And so I think that's an interesting issue, a cultural issue that relatives may not really quite understand the depth of that commitment, you know, and the cult, almost cultural.
Yeah, what's it like to be with somebody for 60 years?
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
We may not have that in our lives.
Yeah.
And so wouldn't it be interesting to gather that information from that person, yeah. you know, and really respect that idea that they had somebody in their life for 60 years.
And they were still speaking most of the
time. Yeah, most of the time.
It's really pretty interesting. Well, let's talk about dementia. It's really disconcerting for the family member, I would think, to be around a person who doesn't recognize them, even if they do want to be caring toward this person. So how do you handle that as the relative who's talking with someone who may not even recognize you, even though you're maybe their child? Or
well, usually it's a process. It started early stage dementia, for example, Alzheimer's, where they're not, they still know who you are and the family members are, but not sure what I had for breakfast, or not sure, you know, when we moved here and those type of things. But, you know, you start reminiscing, and because a lot of people go, well, let's just talk about, you know, when you grew up. Well, that's crystal clear. You know, 30, 40 years ago, 50 years ago, I can tell you, you know, what time of day I went to the store. Yesterday, not so much. And it does get periodically, like I said, it's progressive. So there are times when you come in and Mom or Dad recognizes you, you know, knows the family members, maybe the next day not so much. So it goes back to what Michelle was saying, where even if it's a family member, it's you know, hi Mom, it's your favorite son Doug, you know, that kind of thing, or do it lightly but introduce yourself. And the biggest thing with dementia that causes frustration on both parts, both the family members or someone working with them and the person with dementia, is we have this compulsion to orient people. And, you know, oh no, that's not right, oh you forgot, oh da 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 da, no, that's, remember Dad died years ago, da 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 da. And all that does is frustrate the person you're talking to, and it frustrates you as a family member, because you're trying to, well, part of it's denial, part of it's just trying to think you're helping, but you're trying to orient them and it's not going to happen. And so they get very frustrated. And you're talking about, say, the loss of a spouse, that may be something that pops into their mind, and it was 20 years ago, so it's still new to them, because 20 years ago is more new than yesterday. And, you know, you're going, oh, that was 20 years ago, you know, you haven't thought about it in years, just go on. Well, it's still fresh and new to that person. So being very, again, patient, kind of getting to where they're at. You don't have to agree with everything, but you can redirect. You know, well, you know, I was thinking I'm going down to the dance studio, you know, which they may have done 30 years ago. And, well, you know, I bet dancing is really exciting, you know, but I was wondering the other day about, you know, some of my aunts and uncles, do you have albums? You know, let's look through some of the, and sort of redirect and that family time of looking through old pictures is very calming a lot of times, because again, in some stages of dementia and Alzheimer's, that's very current. It's also a time, as Michelle said, you get family history because it's fresh in their mind. So a lot of it is trying to get to where they are, not getting into arguments, just saying, oh yeah, that must be frustrating. Let's do this. And especially with dementia too, not offering a lot of choices. Well, what do you want to do? A better way to approach that would be, let's do this or let's do that. It's not a contest. And so try to get to where they are. Listen. Listen for clues. Sometimes they may say, you know, I want the coffee cup, and they're looking at the TV, and what they're thinking is the remote, but their coffee cup comes out of the mouth, and just kind of watch what's going on and go, oh, do you want the remote? You know, that type of thing. You know, it's a lot easier to talk about it than it is to do it, especially with family members, because like I said, there is that denial, there's that concern, and there's also the tendency to become the parent when you don't need to become the parent.
Well, I think there's a lot going on. I mean, as somebody who's in that position of being kind of in that caretaker role myself with my dad, that there's sort of a grieving process that goes on as you see things happening. And you want to be supportive, but there's your own stuff that you're trying, your own process of acclimation to this that you're dealing with, that is, because sometimes it is just really demanding.
Well, yeah, and the first time you walk into visit your mom or dad and they don't recognize you, I mean, then you're going through a whole lot inside your mind. And a lot of hurt and a lot of grief. And then pretty soon it can also seem like, why should I go visit? Because I can't remember anyway. And that really isn't the case. I mean, way that I've tried to frame it to people is, when you go and you're visiting with that person, it's about the here and now, and you've made that time for them better. And they may not remember when they walk out the door why they feel better, but they feel better. And isn't that great? That's enough. Just that by itself is enough. And we've talked to people about, you know, bringing tools with them or having tools in the room with them. Like Doug had talked about pictures. You can actually put a storyboard up in their house or in their rooms with families and names of people in their family, so that when people come and visit, same thing with albums, put labels of the names of the people in the pictures. And then anybody visiting with them has a tool to use to bring on conversation and something to talk about. One of our visitors, we had friendly visitors going through our agency, and one of our volunteers one time talked to me about, she used to bring a bag with her when she'd go out to visit, and it was always the same bag. It always had the same things in the bag, and I thought that was a great tool. She would have, you know, she'd have pictures of her family in there, her pets. She'd have little stuffed animals, because sometimes that was comforting to the folks that she was visiting with. She'd have a book to read to them. Maybe some favorite treats that they enjoyed would be with her. But that bag sometimes is what they recognized more than her. Mm. And wasn't that a great tool to have with you all the time? Because they remembered that piece. And so anything that you can start incorporating into your visits, and so it really can take some forethought when you go visit an elder who's really having some problems, thinking about it ahead of time. What can we talk about? What can we do? How do I keep the conversation happy? Do you really care? You know, sometimes we talk about long-term memory as being something that they can focus on. Sometimes even the long-term memory isn't accurate. And so there may be fabrications that happen just because of the things that are happening to their brain. And so what? No, exactly. That's their reality then. Mm-hmm. And so go to that reality with them. And walk the path with them, whatever that path is. No use arguing. The only one that's going to get hurt is you. So go the path. Enjoy the conversation. Enjoy the journey.
I think it's to key off on something Michelle said, and I agree with that 100%. I think what we have to realize, and it's true with all of us to some degree, but what I feel is real to me, you know, and what I'm thinking is real to me. So yeah, to sort of argue against that just increases frustration. But something that I wanted to key on that I've observed many times is if a daughter or son comes in and maybe mom or dad don't recognize them, don't remember them anymore, but they feel good that they're there. Mm-hmm. And I've heard staff in facilities say, yeah, she doesn't recognize her daughter. She doesn't know who it is. But every time her daughter leaves, she goes, she was just a really sweet person. So there's still that positive thing, and I think at some level there's that familiarity. So don't put your expectations on other people. Like Joanne said, or like Michelle said, just go where they are and start from there.
Well, I just want to remind you that you're listening to A Senior Moment, the show for and about seniors. I'm Joanne Rideout. I'm here in the studio with Michelle Lewis from Northwest Senior and Disability Services and Doug Schaefer from the Olympic Area Agency on Aging. And between the two of these folks, they represent a huge, huge resources on either side of the Columbia River in our Pacific Northwest area for information about senior issues. We're talking about communication skills today and how you can best communicate between perhaps younger and older family members and through the aging process. And one of the things that struck me as we were talking about this is that, you know, when you're a child dealing with an aging adult, there's not a whole lot of opportunity to practice these things ahead of time. You know, like if you raise a whole bunch of kids, by the time you get to maybe the fourth or fifth kid, you kind of figured out how to do it. But, you know, you only have two parents and everything can be different. And so, I have to really be on my toes about being mindful and being kind of learning as I go from moment to moment how to handle some of the things that happen, because I don't have any precedent. So that's why I think this show can be really helpful, because you're giving people the benefit of other people's experience in explaining how do you handle something that could be really crushing if you didn't have some kind of reference point or some.
Well, it's on some hands, some ways, it's easier, like for Michelle and I, because we do see hundreds of people over the course of our jobs and our careers and what we do and that kind of thing. But we also have to struggle when it's a family member because of the emotional involvement. And I may have, if I'm talking to a family member, I may have all the theory and know exactly how to do it, but I start getting frustrated myself, and I have to remind myself, okay, well, let's just do this. So there are some tools out there, but I think also for the other family members, don't be too hard on yourselves. It's new ground really for everybody. And even those of us that deal with it on a daily basis, when it's a family member, we've got to remind ourselves, of what to do.
Well, I think for a lot of us who are, the baby boomer generation who is caring for parents right now, I mean, I know that I am going a million miles an hour, and in the middle of all that, I'm making room for taking care of a family member. And so I'll come roaring in from whatever I just tore myself away from, and then all of a sudden I need to stop and take a deep breath and be there for this person who really needs me and doesn't have anybody else to turn to. But that, I imagine there are probably a lot of people who are, they wish they listened more closely, or they wish they were more patient. Because I know just a very simple thing of getting out of the car and walking to the store. I'm somebody who just charges ahead and races into the store, gets my stuff and gets out. And, my dad just can't walk that fast anymore. He used to be like that too, but now he goes pretty slowly. And so, I've tried to walk next to him, and to me it feels excruciating because I want to go into the store. But, that's part of sort of honoring the person, is to slow down to where they are and not make them feel like they're slowing you down.
And giving them the dignity of choices. I mean, it'd be real easy to take their list and go shopping and gather everything, put it in their cart, and get to the front. But there's dignity and respect in going through and letting them choose which cereal they want or what kind of coffee they want, and to give them the time they need to remember what they need. it's so hard. It really is hard to slow down in our busy lives and do that. And as we go through our generations, I think it's even going to be harder for our younger folks to do that because they're multitasking so much. I think we talked really about it, being the biggest gift you can give is to listen and to slow yourself down and be with them, truly be with them during that time.
Well, those little electric carts in Freddy's and everywhere are great because, my dad and I have our cell phones, and he gets in his cart, and he just wants to go do his thing. He'll go, I'll see ya. He'll get in his cart and go, I'll see ya. He doesn't really want me tagging along with him. But if he gets stuck or anything, he can call me on his cell phone.
The battery runs down.
The battery has run down. Mm-hmm. And he said, well, some nice lady came along and went and got the checker, and they brought me a new cart because, it pooped out in aisle 7 or something, and the battery went dead. But, I think it's just an interesting process of, I feel really lucky to have this time with him,
Well, and it's also a whole different ball game if something catastrophic happens, like a stroke. Because the idea that because someone can't communicate, they can't understand isn't valid. If they have aphasia, which means the language part of their brain has been damaged, and they either can't express using language or can't communicate by writing, or they have receptive aphasia. You know, you're talking to them and the words aren't coming through clear. It takes a whole different type of communication than nonverbal communication. And some folks with aphasia can't speak, but they can write. Others can't do either. But it's interesting to watch, again, a couple that's been together 60 years. One of them has a stroke. It's amazing the amount of communication that goes on. Oh, you want your juice now. And you're looking going, how did she know that? You know, did she pick it up telepathically? But the facial expressions, gestures, those type of things. I worked very closely with a gentleman one time that had a pretty serious stroke, and he got to where he could walk with some assistance and that kind of stuff, and learned to, he could repeat words, but he couldn't generate them himself. But he had some catchphrases. And I remember his wife had called me because there was something they needed out of the shop. And he, of course, was trying to communicate to her what it was, because he knew. And she, first of all, didn't know anything about the equipment that he was talking about. So she asked if I'd come over. And about the only thing he could say, whenever he saw me, he'd go, baby, and lift his thumb. And he'd look at you and 1, 2, 3, 4. And that was about it on his own that he could generate. But at the same time, I was able to, if I ask yes and no questions, he could nod and, you know, or say no, 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 you know. And so it was a matter of, is it on the second shelf? No, no, no. Is it on the, you know. So there's different ways to communicate, and gestures and facial expressions and that type of thing. So sometimes that is a real challenge. But take the cues from people who are in there, you know, who live in the home, and watch them.
There's some tools like pictograms and things where you can actually point to what you want. You want water, and if they can't say it, they can point to the picture maybe. So you can, you know, look for tools too that could be helpful. Sometimes they are able to write where they can't talk, and so, you know, use a tablet and paper if that helps. Whatever it does, whatever is useful. But what you don't want to do is assume you know what they're talking about and pretend like you know. But you don't know, you know, take the time to investigate.
Frustration comes in again.
Yeah. Take the time to really try to understand what's going on. And that could take a little bit of work on your part.
Mm-hmm. I think there's a sort of a key phrase in dealing with people, talking to family members about people who've had strokes. And that's be a partner, not a therapist. Mm-hmm. You know, try to partner with them in what you want to do. Don't try to fix them, you know. So.
That's interesting. Well, are there any other health conditions that we want to be talking about relating to communication? I mean, we talked about, you know, dementia, stroke.
Well, blindness is one mm-hmm. of them, you know, or low vision. When you say somebody's blind, it doesn't necessarily mean that they've lost all their vision. They could have, you know, see shadows or, you know, partial rooms. They could just have lost their peripheral vision. But certainly how you communicate with a person who does have low vision or is blind is important too, because, you know, then, you know, touch could be important, you know, you're there. Knowing when you walk into a room, you want to let them know you're there. When you're leaving a room, you want to let them know you're there. As things change in the room, people go in and out, you know, being able to explain your environment that you're in is important.
Don't rearrange the furniture because you like it better.
Oh gosh, I guess not. You know,
there's been more than one home care worker that's walked in and moved everything on a person who has low vision, and then when they leave, they can't find anything that they had before. So, you know, ask permission, you know, and talk to them about where things are and make sure that you put it back. And they may actually be very sensitive to you touching anything in their environment because they know how important it is to where it is. So be respectful of that.
And again, if there's because there's things also, I mean, there's all kinds of things. There's traumatic brain injury and all kinds of things that can break down communication or make it difficult. But that's when family members really need to partner with the physical therapist, the speech therapist, because they've got tons of information. And you can go on websites about stroke or about dementia. A lot of communication tips there, too.
Well, you know, one thing that I wanted to mention also that we discussed a little bit before the show is that all these things that we're talking about with relationship to elders, can apply to somebody much younger, too. I mean, younger people have issues with health challenges, just like what we're talking about, that sometimes are a consequence of aging, and sometimes they're a consequence of injuries or illness. And so the same kinds of communication skills could apply to a much younger family member.
Absolutely.
Or a friend or a spouse who is now challenged in ways that they weren't previously challenged. So I think, you know, it's important. You know, I remember reading something about that the vast majority of the communication that we have with other people is nonverbal.
Yes.
So when you're talking about spouses being able to tell what, you know, there's an awful lot of nonverbal stuff. And for people who have lived together for decades, they must be communicating on a whole different level from, you know, the way most people communicate.
Absolutely. And in the realm of dementia, that's real important. One of the skills that a lot of people with dementia will maintain is their intuitive emotional connection to people. They know if you're angry, even if you're covering it up, you know, I think you're covering it up, they feel the feelings that you have when you walk in the room and when you leave and when you're talking to them. And so you really want to check yourself, you know, and your attitude when you're visiting with them.
Yeah, and I think that one of the things that we kind of touched on briefly before, now dementia is a different category, but say it's a stroke or a brain injury or something like that, the tendency for us is if we think that someone has difficulty communicating, somewhere in the back of our mind, even though we don't really grasp it, we're thinking that something has happened to their intelligence. Mm-hmm. And that's not mm-hmm. so. You know, it's just the speech center. I mean, 85% of language is on the left side of our brain. So if something happens on our left side of the brain, we can't communicate. It doesn't mean we don't know what we want. It doesn't mean that we're diminished, you know, in our intellect. It just means that communication is broken down. It's kind of, I've seen time and time again, people who have a severe hearing loss, and you hear someone talking to them, and they're talking to them like they're 4 years old, you know, and I heard one lady say, yeah, I finally told my doctor, I'm deaf, not stupid. So, yeah, you got to, oh, yeah, okay.
Well, and yelling the same phrase over and over again, louder and louder, yeah, will not work. I mean, you might want to rephrase it.
Right.
And that's, yeah.
Well, I think we've all had that experience of, especially the older we get, of feeling the same way we felt when we were maybe 30, but we look different now. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the same way, is that, you know, our aging people who just happen to be ahead of us on life's path are still that same person inside a changing body. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And so even if you don't see it, they still think of themselves as if they were, I mean, I know my dad, he's like, he thinks of himself as being about 40, and then he looks at him and goes, what the heck happened, you know, and which is what we all go through. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the continuum of life, you know, but so that recognition that there is that person is still in there.
Right. And the dementia thing actually can put you there. And so, I mean, you can,
right,
that person can be thinking they're 16 and want to know where their parents are. And, you know, granddaughter coming in and calling them grandma, that can be an issue.
Say, who are you?
So, yeah. So, you know, understanding that they may not be in even the same time and reality with you. Just be where they are. That's really important.
Yeah, they can't imagine that. How could I have kids your age? You know,
exactly. And so, yeah, you want to be wherever they're at.
Yes.
Well, we are at the point in the show when it's time to give contact information. And if you have heard anything on this show that you have questions about, if you're interested in more assistance or referral to people who can help, these are the people to call. And Michelle is our Oregon person with Northwest Senior and Disability Services. How can people get a hold of your office?
Okay, so we're in the Warrenton office. We're kind of behind Costco near the animal shelter. And our phone number there is 503-861-4200. Our website is nws.org.
Okay, and Doug, you're the Washington side of things. How do people get a hold of you?
In South Pacific County, our Long Beach office is 642-3634. And in North County, our Raymond office is 942-2177. And our website is www.o3a, and that's the number 3, .org.
And that is the Olympic Area Agency on Aging.
Yes, that's where I work.
You've been listening to A Senior Moment, the show for and about seniors. I'm Joanne Rideout, and I've been here in the studio again this month with Michelle Lewis from Northwest Senior and Disability Services and Doug Schaefer from the Olympic Area Agency on Aging. Thanks to you both for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And thanks to everyone for listening, and we'll see you next month on A Senior Moment.